and I go back to Mrs. Jones, then back to the calls, change my mind again, go to the third column. I don't know what part of self is affected by that because I don't know anything about self. And if you don't do that very long, your little mind goes tilt. And then I say to myself, oh, heck, or words to that effect, that what they really want is all my life story. So I just skip over all this as if it means nothing. And that's what I did. I wrote my life story, is what they were telling me, and went through all that motion. And I didn't learn much of anything from that because I already knew it. You see. But the instructions on how to work this from page 65 is in the book. So it says right here, in dealing with resentment, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry, period. We think this inventory needs to be filled out from top to bottom, one column at a time, rather than left to right. Because I have to change my mind too much going left to right, not knowing anything about most of those things. So from top to bottom is the key. And so I start writing down the people. I know who I'm resentful at. I'm resentful at their people. I know who they are, and I know their names. So I put it on column one, leaving a little space about like that in between, just like they did in the big book. Institutions, put those down too. The institutions is a post office, the police stations, the policemen, the courthouses, the post office, the banks. I'm mad at a lot of those people, and institutions, put them down. I'm mad at the principals. I know of a lot of principals that I didn't particularly care for. One of them was, what goes up must come down. I was never happy about that one. My mother used to say, son, if you lay down with dogs, you get up with fleas. Principles like that, I didn't like that at all. So I put those things down, one column at a time, top to bottom, leaving a little space in between each and every one of them. That is so simple. It's so simple to do. We can do that in just a little while.
Okay, we have given you an inventory sheet that's got five columns in it. If you can fold it under where you can't even see the last two columns, if you can. If you can't, just ignore the last two columns. We'll use them in a couple pages later. When you do that, then you'll have three columns. And it'll be nothing more than page 65 in the blank form. Now, one of the problems we've always had is we didn't understand how Bill filled out those three columns. Therefore, we were very confused about how to do the inventory. So you start with the blank. Column one, I'm resentful at. Column two is the cause. Column three is affects my. Now, we want to be sure that everybody understands we're not trying to bring another inventory into AA. Those first three columns are nothing but page 64. In the blank form. And then your instructions on how to do it are down at the bottom of page 64. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. Period. Let's stop right there. And let's go to column one. And working top to bottom, let's make a list of the people, institutions, and principals with whom we are angry. Bill's example, Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, my employer, my wife. And if you'll notice, he's leaving a little extra space in between each name, so we'll be able to do a little writing over in the next column. And if we do that top to bottom, while our mind is on one thing and one thing only, it's a very simple thing to do. I've never seen an alcoholic yet that didn't know just who and what, by God, we're mad at. Hell, we spend thousands of hours sitting around in bars talking about it. All we have to do is take it out of our head, put it down on paper in this column one. Hopefully, the same thing will happen to you that happened to me. They came to me and they said, make a list of your resentments. I said, I don't have any. I said, oh, surely you do. Maybe you don't understand what a resentment is. And they explained to me it's to refill those old hurts, those old angers, those old pains. I said, oh yeah, I've got a couple of those. And they said, well, get them down on paper. And I picked up a sheet of paper and I started making the list. And the next thing you know, I had put about 8 names on that sheet of paper. I got another sheet of paper, and a little while I had 8 more. And I got another sheet of paper, and a little while I had 8 more. And I got another sheet of paper, and a little while I had 8 more. I got up to about 152. I said, man, you're madder than hell at everything. I did not know that. You can only see one resentment at a time in your head. I don't think any of us will ever realize how much resentments control our thinking until we get them all down on paper for the first time and see how many of them we really, really do have. Now, we made a decision to let God direct our thinking. If we got that many resentments, then they direct our thinking and God can't, and we'll never know that until we get them down on paper and see them in their entirety for the first time. Now let's look at the second instruction.
We ask ourselves why we were angry, period. Stop right there. We go to the second column. Now you notice in the second column all the way down, Bill has used 4 or 5 words to describe the cause. No long dissertation, no long sheet after sheet describing the cause. It's simply 4 or 5 little words. You know why that's true? Because those are just little notes to yourself to remind you to talk about them when you get over to step 5. And I guess 4 or 5 little words will remind me the whole story, you see. Put them down on a piece of paper to remind me to talk about them when I get over to step 5.
By the side of each name, we put down the cause of the resentment. For instance, he's mad at Mr. Brown because of attention to my wife. Told my wife and my mistress, and Brown may get my job at the office. Hell, I don't blame him. I'd be mad at Brown, too. In fact, I'm already getting mad at him. I don't even know him. He's looking at him. He's mad at Mrs. Jones. She's a nut. She snubbed me. She committed her husband for drinking, put his best drinking buddy in the insane asylum. He's my friend and she's a gossip. He's mad at his employer. He's unreasonable, unjust, and overbearing. He probably said, say, Bill, where were you all day Monday anyhow? He threatens to fire me for drinking and padding my expense account. Now, that's unreasonable as hell, isn't it?
He's a very narrow-minded individual.
He's mad at his wife because she misunderstands and nags. And she likes old Brown. And she wants the house put in her name. Now, you tie together like an old Brown wanting the house put in her name, it's time to get a little upset here. You know? Just a few simple little words. As I filled out the second column, I learned something that's very valuable. I begin to realize it's really not them I'm mad at. It's what they've done to me that's got me upset. You know, I'd take Mr. Brown out of here and put Mr. Green in. I'd be just as mad at Green as I am at Brown. I could take Mrs. Jones out of here and put Mrs. Smith in. I'd be just as mad at her if she does the same thing. I begin to realize it's really not them, it's what they've done to me that's got me upset. And I think one of the reasons that is so invaluable to us is a little later on in our program, we're going to be going to people and ask them to forgive us for what we've done to them. By the same token, we're going to have to start forgiving other people for what they've done to us. And the forgiveness can start right here in column 2. When I quit looking at names and start looking at the cause, then that starts getting personalities out of the way. Very, very valuable information for me. Let's look at the third column now.
Now, what part of self is affected? Beforehand, I didn't know about self. But now we've seen about the basic instincts of life. We can see how we're threatened by those. Somebody threatens us, one of our basic instincts of life. We know what part of self is affected now. So we go to the third column. And what part of self is affected? His attention to my wife. Or what part of self is affected? Well, sex relations. Because if she finds out that old Brown is better than I am, she might cut me off at home and take up with Mr. Brown. So I would perceive a threat to my sex relations.
Self-esteem. What are people going to think about me now if my wife gets to fooling around with old Brown over there? Constantly worried about what other people think of us. How about he told my wife and my mistress? Now, boy, that's a threat to sex relations.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as the wife found out about it, she cut him off at home. She goes over there and raises hell with the mistress, and he's cut off over there, too. No sex relations at all. That's a threat to your self-esteem, too. What are people going to think about me if this little deal about me and Brown and my wife becomes, and mistress becomes common neighborhood gossip? Now, here I'm living in the neighborhood and going to work every day like a good feller ought to, and I'm supporting my wife and children and paying my taxes and taking the Boy Scouts out on Saturday afternoon and teaching Sunday school on Sunday, and all of a sudden this little story about me and my wife and Brown and my mistress has now become neighborhood gossip. My God, what will they think about me now? If you don't think that's a threat to self-esteem, you ask a guy named Jimmy Baker.
Mm-hmm.
You ask a guy named Bill Clinton. You ask some of those other guys that have been in the spotlight for years for this kind of stuff. Threatens our self-esteem. He's mad at Brown because he might get my job at the office. That's a threat to my security. If Brown gets my job at the office, I don't have any income. It's also a threat to my self-esteem. What are people going to think about me now if Brown undercuts me and takes my job away from me? It would be impossible for me to be upset with another human being unless they've done something to threaten one of the three basic instincts of life. So if I've got a resentment, then I need to see which part of self is affected. As I filled out the third column, I think I learned the most valuable thing I've ever learned. As I filled out the third column for the first time in my life, I saw where anger comes from. I've always had a problem with anger. And I would always act and react in anger and hurt people and be ashamed of myself and swear I'd never do it again, turn right around and do it over and over and over. You can't do anything about a problem till you understand it. And I thought anger was just one of those feelings that flitted into your head. You could do nothing to control it, nothing to keep it down like it ought to be. And finally I began to realize that anger comes from a threat to one of my basic instincts of life. If you threaten my social instinct, if you threaten my security instinct, if you threaten my sex instinct, if you threaten my plans for the future, you upset me and you make me angry. And that's where it comes from. Today I begin to realize, and I know today, that it depends upon my relationship with God and whether these instincts are under control or not as to whether or not I'm going to get angry. I begin to find out it's really not the people. It's really not even what they've done. It's how I've reacted to it. And if my relationship with God is right, my instincts are under control, you can do about anything you want to me. And I don't have to react with anger. Now, I'm married to a lady now. We've been married 40 years. Beautiful Al-Anon. If there's any such thing as a black belt Al-Anon, she's it. She's got about 38 years in the Al-Anon program. Got a great program. But now, once in a while, she gets sick, too. Al-Anons don't like to admit that they do, but they do once in a while. And sometimes she'll do something based on self, which threatens one of my basic instincts of life. And when she does, it hurts. I feel the pain. Now I've got one or two choices. If my relationship with God is right, and if my instincts are under control, I find I'm able to say, well, the poor old thing, they're sick too, just like we are, and they can't help it any more than we can, and it'll just slide off of my back, and the rest of the day's in good shape. But if my instincts are not under control, my relationship with God's not right, and she does whatever she did to threaten my basic instincts, I react with anger. And I romp and stomp and I raise hell with her and everybody around me all day long. Same lady did the same thing, only I choose to react to it in an entirely different manner, based upon my own relationship with God and whether my instincts are under control at the level that God intends for to be. Thank God I've learned that. Because you see, I can't do anything about Barbara. I can't do anything about any other human being on earth. But I can do something about my reaction to it. And I don't have to get angry. And I'm much less a chance of drinking than I would be if I let myself go ahead and get angry and raise all kinds of hell. We filled out 3 columns. We've learned 3 things. Column 1, we've learned how resentful we really are, how much that blocks us off from God. Column 2, we've learned it's not them we're resentful at as much as what they've done to us. Column 3, we've learned that it's not even what they've done to us, it's how we have chosen to react to it as to whether we're going to be angry or not. Now, we're going to put a couple examples up here on the board from mine and Joe's inventory. You won't do very many, but just 2 or 3 to show you how simple this thing really is in filling out page 65. Column 1. The first name on my resentment sheet was this lady named Barbara. God, I love her today. But I'll guarantee you about 37-38 years ago, I hated this woman with a purple passion. If there had been any way I could have gotten rid of her and killed her without getting caught, I believe I would have done it. I used to lay awake at night and fantasize. I'd think tomorrow now on her way to work, and I always believed her being self-supporting through her own contributions. I'd think tomorrow on her way to work, she's going to get run over by a semi-truck. And it's not going to be just any trucking company. It's going to be a very affluent trucking company. And they're going to kill her, and I'm going to sue them, and I'm going to get rid of her and get about $2 million out of this deal at the same time. You know, you Al-Anons are not the only ones that fantasize. We alcoholics did it too. Second name on my list was the Internal Revenue Service. Now, if you want to see a guy come unglued in those days, you just mentioned the IRS where I could hear you. And I immediately began to froth at the mouth, jump up and down, and just raise hell with everything around me. God, I hated those people. Joe, who was the first one on your list?
Name was Rose.
A lady named Rose. Now, who was Rose?
Rose was number 1.
Rose was, my God. My God, how many have you had? He says he's been married to 2 ladies 7 different times. Now, I don't know whether that's a record or not, but it's getting pretty close to it, isn't it? And old Rose was 1, right? Okay, now that's how simple column 1 is. You just make that list of names. Let's go to column 2. What was the cause of the anger? Why am I so mad at Barbara? Well, this woman had the audacity to file for divorce 3 times the last year before she went to Al-Anon. She's spending more money on divorces and lawyers than I'm spending on booze and everything that goes along with it. And I really, really had it in for her. There was a lot of other reasons, but that was the major reason. 3 divorces within 1 year. Why was I so mad at the Internal Revenue Service? Well, very simple. They're trying to put me in jail. And I'm sure as hell mad at them over that little deal trying to put me in jail. Joe, how come you so mad at old Rose?
He had an affair with another man.
Had an affair with another man.
For all I've done.
See, how that's how simple column 2 is. There may be one cause, there may be multiple causes. We just picked out one particular cause on each one of those. Now let's go to column 3. Which part of self is affected? Barbara filing for divorce 3 times within 1 year. Is that a threat to my personal relationships? Oh, yeah. She's going to take the kids and she's going to leave, or they're going to throw me out. I'm not going to be able to have anything to do with her and the kids in the future. Is it a threat to my security? You better bet it is. By the time she and the lawyers get done, they're going to have everything we've got, what little bit we've got left. They'll get it all. I'll have none left at all. Is it a threat to my sex life? Well, yeah, she's not going to let me have any after we get a divorce. I had a hard enough time getting her to let me have any before we got married. I'm sure I won't after we get a divorce. It's just about that simple in filling that out. Let's look at the Internal Revenue Service. If they put me in jail, is that a threat to my personal relationships? Sure. They're not going to let my wife and kids have anything to do with me in jail. Is it a threat to my security? Oh, yeah. By the time they get through with their fines, they'll have all of it. There will be none left at all. Is it a threat to my sex life? The kind I'd like to have, yeah, it's a threat to it. There may be some in there I don't want. Just about that simple, isn't it? And of course, in both cases, whether it's Barbara or Internal Revenue Service, it's a threat to my ambitions, too. My plans for the future regarding my family life and my plans for the future regarding my business life and et cetera and et cetera. Self-esteem, very definitely so. Old Rose having an affair with another man. Is that a threat to Joe's personal relationships? Yeah. Threat to his self-esteem? Yeah. Threat to his security? Oh, yeah, he'll have to go to work now. She's been supporting him for the last 10 years. Is it a threat to his sex life? Is it a threat to his plans for the future? You betcha. It's just about that simple in filling this thing out. And anybody can fill this sheet out in just a matter of a couple of hours. You know, it just doesn't take any longer than that to fill this sheet out. Now that we've got it filled out, let's see what we do with it. At the bottom of page 65, we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. Well, the first thing that was apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? And I read that last statement and I stopped right there. I tried to look back in my life and see how many hours I've won squandered in resentments. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I know about me. And when I got a good resentment churning around in my head, I'm pretty well paralyzed from doing anything worthwhile. And back when I was drinking, one of my favorite things was to get up in the morning, have a drink of whiskey and a cup of coffee, and turn on my resentment replay machine and replay what she did to me yesterday. Replay what he did to me last week. Replay what that damn boss did to me 6 months ago. Replay what that lousy policeman did to me a year ago. Replay what that judge did to me 5 years ago. Replay, 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 replay. And it took me just about an hour to run through that tape, and I loved every moment of it. And when that tape would run out, I'd have another drink of whiskey and another cup of coffee. And I would turn on my get-even machine. Now, by God, the next time she does that, I'll do this, and she'll say that, and I'll do this, and Waco, I'm going to put it on her. They're not going to treat me that way. And it took just about an hour to run through that tape. And I loved every moment of it, Joe. I'm going to lose it.
Yeah, go ahead. We play on our get-even machine. How we're going to get even with them the next time they do these things. We're going to do this and do that. You can't treat me that way. And we used and squandered many, many hours of our lives into that. We only got about 25,000 hours or so to live. Squandered them away, thrown away by the handful with resentments. My mind was resentful. And that's one thing about resentment. When your mind becomes resentful, you're resentful everywhere. Nothing looks good. We're sick, spiritually sick. We're resentful at everything. That's one reason why we end up with all those resentments. Our mind is resentful. That's not the worst thing about it, though. That's bad enough to squander those hours that might have been worthwhile. As Charlie said, some of us are getting short on hours. And I really don't want to squander any more hours in resentment if I can keep from it. So far, I haven't. But that's bad enough. But the worst part about it is this. But the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns when we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. That's the worst thing about resentments. It cuts itself off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And I know a lot about that. Believe me, I do.
If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. We turn back to the list. See, this is why you got to have a written inventory. If you'd have tried to do this just in your mind, you would have lost it all by now. But with a written inventory, we'll go back to that list. For it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Always before, I looked at it to see what those suckers had done to me. Today, I would look at it to see what that resentment is doing to me. And if it's going to block me off from God and cause me to get drunk, then I'm looking at it from an entirely different angle. We begin to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing as others fancied or real had power to actually kill. And I stopped and I said, man, how stupid can you be? All my life I've been proud of the fact that I stand on my own 2 feet. Nobody tells me what to do. I don't need your advice, thank you. And I suddenly realized that other people have controlled and dominated my thinking as far back as I can remember through my resentments toward them. And if they've controlled and dominated my thinking, they've controlled and dominated my actions. And I have turned my life over to those that I resent, and I've given them the power to actually kill me. And I thought, man, that is stupid as hell. And then I said, you know, some of these people have been dead and buried in the graveyard for years. They've been reaching out from the grave and had me by the yang-yang as far back as I can remember. And when I saw that, it looked so dumb. I said to myself, to hell with them. I'm not going to let those people live in my head rent-free any longer. I've made a decision to let God direct my thinking. And if others direct it, alive or dead, then God can't, and it's just that simple. Now, we alcoholics fancy ourselves as reasonably intelligent people. And I think we are. I don't think we're smarter than others, but we're reasonably intelligent people. And we don't like to look dumb. And we see the stupidity behind these resentments. When we see what we're letting others do to us through those resentments that look so dumb, we become ashamed of it. And a great thing happened. About 95% of those resentments begin to disappear simply because they look so damn dumb when I saw the truth behind them. Absolutely amazing. But there might be 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5 that have been embedded in our minds so deeply that just seeing the truth behind them doesn't get rid of them. And we're going to have a little extra help there. We now come to the first prayer in step 4 in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. We hear always about the step 3 prayers. We hear about the step 7 prayers. We hardly ever hear about the prayers that are spread throughout the steps itself. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol.
Can't heal a sick mind with a sick mind. Can't think a way out of it. What is the solution? Well, this was our course. We realized that the people who had wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. And though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. The first prayer, we pray for ourselves. We ask God to help us to show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience we cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, well, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. See, I've always tried to figure out how to get even with those people. And I have laid awake night after night after year after year after year thinking, how am I going to get even with those people? I've wasted and squandered lots of time in my life in that. My mind raced uncontrollably. And the only way to stop it was to take a drink for me for many years. And I found a way through this book how you can get even with those people. You know the way you get even with them? It's you pray for them. And then you're even. You see, and I did not know that. I've been sober about 3 or 4 months, and I went to a little conference in Apache, Oklahoma. And I met a lady there. Her name was Alabama Carruthers. Some of you all may have known Alabama. Terrific lady from California. Loved her to death. You would have too. She was excited about life and living. She couldn't wait to see what was going to happen next. Her husband was part of the Truman cabinet. Very well educated lady, but an alcoholic. And one night, she talked there on Friday night. And she said 2 things that night that really struck me. One of them, she said, was, I've got peace of mind tonight. And it went off in my head, peace of mind. My God, how long has it been since I've had peace of mind? I could not remember. She said she had a soul sickness, too. A soul sickness, yes. That's what I had that last night. I was sitting on that bar stool drinking. And I couldn't drink anymore. I got up off that bar stool and went home and lay down on the couch and began to think about my life. Soul sickness, that's what it was, you see. And I wanted to talk to her about these things and ask her what I could do. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, after everybody had left the hotel and my little friend George was laying in her lap, and I said, Alabama, I said, you said you had peace of mind tonight. How did you get peace of mind? And she said, well, Joe, tell me what's going on in your mind. Well, I never told anybody that. Heck, they thought I was crazy if they knew. And I told them about Rose over there. Good woman, really. Really was a good woman. Except it was me. See, when I drank in those days, I drank and went places. And I didn't come home right away either. I'd be gone a night or 2 or 3 or a week or a month or 3 months. It didn't matter. And when I came back, it was just like I'd went to the store to get a loaf of bread. Had no more concern for her and her well-being than nothing. Because when we got married, I'd drunk. Woke up one morning and married her. See, had no concern for her whatsoever. And then I was sitting in the bar down at the Zebra Lounge. That's another lovely place. And I'm sitting at the bar at the Zebra Lounge, and I was drinking. Now, y'all know either drink or think, but don't get the two of them mixed up. And I was drinking, and I got to thinking. Well, old Rose hadn't seen me in about 3 months. I bet she's lonely. I mean, wouldn't you be lonely if you hadn't seen me in about 3 months? And I said, I think I'll go home and visit. Anybody know what I mean by visit? Okay. I'm going to go home and visit. And so I went over to my house and I knocked on the door and she kind of peeked out. And I just broke in there is what I did. I just pushed her aside. And I got in my house and there's still no boy in my reclining chair watching my TV with my wife and I'm making payments on all that. Well, what are you going to do? I did. I jumped on that old boy and he liked to beat me to death in my own living room floor. Threw me outside and told me not to ever come back. Boy, you think I didn't live on that one for a long time? And she said, well, Joe, you're just full of resentments. And I said, well, what is a resentment? She said, resentments are old angers and old hurts that are refelt over and over and over. And all that anger you've got within you, you intend to use on them. You turn it on yourself. You're making yourself sick and blaming it on them. And I could see that. I said, well, is there any solution to that? She said, yes, there is. And Alabama had a big old purse about that big. She carried it. And she began to dig down in there and finally found, you know how they are, and finally found one of these big books down in that purse. I'd like to have never found it, but she found it. And she turned to page 551 in the big book. And she said, Joe, if you'll read and do these things, she said it helped her and maybe it would help me. So on page 551 of the big book in Freedom from Bondage, third paragraph, she said, I've had many spiritual experiences since I've been in the program, many that I didn't recognize right away, for I'm slow to learn, they take many guises. But one was so outstanding, I like to pass it on whenever I can in the hope that it would help someone else as it helped me. As I said earlier, self-pity and resentment were my constant companions, and my inventory began to look like a 33-year diary, for I seemed to have a resentment against everybody I'd ever known. All but one responded to the treatment suggested in the steps immediately, but this one posed a problem. It was against my mother, and was 25 years old. I had fed it, fanned it, and nurtured it as one might a delicate child, and had become as much a part of me as my breathing. It had provided me with my excuses for lack of education, my marital failures, personal failures, inadequacies, and of course my alcoholism. Though I really thought I'd been willing to part with it now, I knew I was reluctant to let it go. One morning, however, I realized I had to get rid of it when my reprieve was running out. If I didn't get rid of it, I was going to get drunk, and I didn't want to get drunk anymore. In my prayers that morning, I asked God to point out to me some way to be free of this resentment. During the day, a friend of mine brought some magazines to take to a hospital group I was interested in. And I looked through them, and a banner across the front of one featured an article by a prominent clergyman in which I caught the word resentment. He said, in effect, and here it is, if you have a resentment you want to be free of, if you will pray for the person or thing that you resent, you will be free. If you will ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you don't really want it for them and your prayers are only words and you don't mean it, go ahead and do it anyway. Do it every day for 2 weeks and you'll find you've come to mean it and want it for them. And you'll realize that where you used to feel bitterness, resentment, and hatred, you now feel compassion, understanding, and love. I went home after that little conference and got in bed. I slept on the couch where I slept because the bedroom was dark. I was scared to death to be there by myself, truthfully. But anyhow, I said, I think I'll pray for those people. And I started praying for them and adding some other people to the list. The next morning I got up and I said, I think I'll pray for those people. And I began to pray for those people, adding some people to the list. As days went by, I don't know if it was 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or a month, I don't know. But it seemed like I was in constant prayer all the time for all those people that I resented. And one day, in early April, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, after a cold, hard winter, I got stuck in a stoplight, just the length of a stoplight, at the corner of 31st and Lewis, a beautiful area in our home, in our town. Just the length of the stoplight. The sun was out bright and beautiful, and I looked over there at that pretty house. The grass was so green, it was unreal how green it was. The little tulips were in full bloom, red and yellow. Beautiful morning. The little birds were jumping around in the trees and singing. Squirrels were moving around. And a thought came to me was like this. It's a beautiful day, isn't it? And I said to myself, Joe, how long has it been since I've seen those things? Do you know what? I could not remember. I could not remember how long it had been. See, I know what it means to be cut off from the sunlight of the Spirit. I mean, I really do. How long has it been? I couldn't remember. I don't remember if I ever seen colors before. I'd always looked at things through black and white. You see, but that morning I saw in colors. And I knew that this program would work for me that morning. Because I have finally took some action and got results. You see. And I don't ever want to go back into that again, ever. You know. And when they talk about that, being cut off in the sunlight of the Spirit, I know what that means. Really do. It's a terrible, terrible place to be.
If you've got a resentment against another human being, and you don't want to get rid of it, for God's sake, don't pray about it. Because if you do, you're going to lose it. I think the reason this works so good is prayer for the welfare of another human being is one of the greatest expressions of love that one human being can have for another. And love and hate cannot exist on the same plane. Through prayer, eventually, the hate, the resentment, the anger begins to disappear. Try it for 2 weeks. If it doesn't work, try it for 2 more weeks. And eventually you'll get rid of that resentment if you want to get rid of it. We've got to do one more thing now before we're through for the day. Let's go back to page 67.
By the way, a lot of people think that if we pray for those people that they're going to change. No. What happens is that we change.
Let's go back to page 67 and go back to the inventory sheet. And down in the middle of the page, the paragraph starts with, referring to our list again. Now, this is the second time we've had to refer to that list. So it's got to be a written inventory. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Uh-oh. We've never done this before, have we? We've always looked to see what they've done. We never did look to see the part that we really played in it. Or had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them, we placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. So I got that inventory sheet out, and I went to the fourth column on it, and I said, Charlie, now you do what your book is telling you to do. You forget what Barbara did to you. You forget about those 3 divorces that she filed for in 1 year. What did you do, if anything, to set this in motion? And it took me about 5 seconds to say, if I hadn't have been out there screwing around, I wouldn't have got caught. And if I hadn't have got caught, she probably wouldn't have filed for divorce in the first place. Joe calls it committing adultery. I just call it screwing around. I thought about it a little bit more. And I said, you know, if I hadn't have been sneaking around behind her back lying to her all the time, she might not have filed for divorce in the first place. If I hadn't have been blowing all of our money on what I thought I needed, disregarding what she and the children needed, she might not have filed for divorce in the first place. And I began to realize right there why I loved that resentment. You see, I had played it over and over and over and over in my mind. And every time I played it over, I made what she did a little bit worse. And what I did just a little bit less. And let me play it over enough times, I can transfer all blame to her, make myself as pure as the driven snow, and then go ahead and live the kind of life that I was wanting to live. and never have to look at myself because, after all, it was her fault. I looked at the Internal Revenue Service. I hated them so badly because they were about to put me in jail. In that fourth column, I said, well, what did you do to set it in motion? Very simple. I cheated on my income tax. And they caught me. And they were trying to put me in jail because I myself had made a decision based on self, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. And I played it over and over and over and over, transferred all blame to them, rather than look at myself as a liar and a cheat and a thief. I transferred all blame to them. My God, no wonder I loved those resentments. In Joe's resentment, what did he do to set this thing in motion? He was always out running around, staying away from home 2 or 3 months at a time. Old Rose got tired of that. And I don't blame her. I probably would have had an affair also if I'd have been in her shoes. You know, in the fourth column, we finally begin to see the truth about the resentments. We begin to look and see the part that we ourselves played in it. And what we did with them was we played them over and over and transferred all blame to others, and that way we didn't have to change. And we men go from woman to woman to woman. You ladies go from man to man to man. We go from job to job to job, city to city to city, and it's always their damn fault. And we never have to change ourselves until we see the real truth behind the resentments. It also said for me to look to see where I had been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, or inconsiderate. So I went to the fifth column. In this deal with Barbara, was I selfish? You better bet I was. I wanted what I wanted whenever I wanted it, and to hell with everybody else. Was I dishonest? Oh, yeah. Sneaking around, lying all the time. Was I self-seeking and frightened? Oh, yeah. I said, man, you're getting close to 40 years old. If you're ever going to get some of that, you better get out there and get it before it's too late. Fear drives us to do many things that end up hurting other people. Was I inconsiderate? Oh, yeah. If I really put the welfare of my wife and children ahead of my own, I wouldn't have been doing those things in the first place. And I begin to see in that fifth column the kind of personality that I had developed through my years of living a life run on self-will. I always thought I was a pretty good guy. I just drank too much. But when I begin to look at the truth behind these resentments, I begin to see in every case where I had become a very selfish human being. And I did things based on self that hurt them, and then they retaliated, and then I resented them for doing so. I begin to see where I was a very dishonest human being. Not just cash register honesty, but in every other way. I begin to see how frightened I really was as an individual. I begin to see how inconsiderate I had become of other people. And for the first time, I begin to see if I don't change that, then I'm going to keep right on doing the same old things that I've always done. I'm going to keep right on hurting people. And they're going to retaliate, and then I'm going to resent them for doing so, and that's going to block me off from God, and I'm going to end up drunk over it. At the very least, I'm going to have to start trying to change some of those things that I see out there in that fifth column. If I stay selfish, I'm going to keep right on doing the same old thing. If I stay dishonest, if I stay self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate, I keep doing the same old things over and over and over and over and over. It blocks me off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And eventually I get drunk over it. So what we're really looking at here, we're doing step four. This is the inventory, this is the resentment part of the inventory, step four. Out in the fifth column, I now see the exact nature of the wrong that I'm going to talk to another human being about. The resentment is the wrong. That's what blocks me off from God. But the exact nature of something is what's the truth behind it. What's at the core of it? What's the inherent characteristic of it? Well, the truth behind that resentment is my own dishonesty, my own selfishness, my own self-seeking, frightened personality, my own inconsideration. That's what we're going to talk about in a step five. A guy comes to me today to do a step five. I don't care how many times he's committed adultery. I don't care whether he's done it once or 1,000. What I'm interested in is what's within him that causes him to do that. Is he doing it through selfishness? Is he doing it through fear? Is he doing it through inconsideration? That's what he's going to have to change if he don't want to do that anymore. I don't care how many times he's stolen, nor do I care how much he's stolen. What I'm interested in is what's within his character that causes him to do the stealing. Is he just a plain dishonest human being? Is he doing it through fear? What's causing him to do it? That's what we're going to have to work on. In the fifth column, I now see the character defects that I'm going to be willing to have God remove in step six. Because if I stay that way, then I don't stand a chance of peace of mind in the future. In the fifth column, I now see the shortcomings I'm going to ask God to take away in step seven. And if He can remove those, and if I can start doing the opposite, then I can begin to change my personality with God's help. In your case, some of the names in column one, in my case, all the names in column one, were people and institutions that I had harmed. And they're going to come off of that list and be added to the sheet to be used later on for steps 8 and 9. When I get to 8 and 9, the book says we've got the list, we made it when we took step 4. Part of those names come right off of that resentment sheet, and they'll go on the list for 8 and 9. You see, what I've done through this simple little process here is I've set myself up with all the information I need for steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, resentment-wise. Resentment-wise. Later on, we're going to do this on fear. Later on, we're going to do it in harms done to others. This particular part is dealing with the resentments. Not only did I see the truth behind them, I begin to see what I have to change to keep it from happening in the future. And I had a very positive result. These display cases up here that were filled with resentments have now been emptied out. And they're opened up for God's thinking. And where my mind used to be filled with resentments, now I have a little love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill toward my fellow man. That's God's thinking, but it was effectively blocked out by resentments. And what I was really amazed at is I didn't have to read any other books. I didn't have to go to any other fellowships to find love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill. If God dwells within me, that's always been a part of my makeup. I just never could use it before. In my chase for money, power, prestige, sex, and what I thought were the good things of life, those feelings had to be repressed to let me operate on the level I wanted to operate on. But now the resentments are gone. They begin to come to the surface automatically. I'm in much less chance of drinking now than I was before I started on this particular part of the inventory process. The most simple thing I've ever seen in my life. Blows my mind every day when I look at this and see how simple it is and what the results will be. Now, I hear some of you saying, and I hear good. I hear some of you saying, well, Charlie, that's probably true. For those people that we have harmed them, But how about those that harmed us, that we didn't have anything to do with it? How about those that hurt us when we were kids growing up? How about the mental abuse, the physical abuse, the sexual abuse that we experienced as kids growing up? Aren't we justified in having that kind of resentment? Well, I guess we are if we want to get drunk over it. But a justified resentment does the same thing that an unjustified resentment does. It blocks you off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And whoever you're resenting, justified or unjustified, they are controlling your thinking for you. And if they're controlling your thinking, they're controlling your actions, they're controlling your life, and you have given them the power to actually kill you. And if we've got one of those kind of resentments, and believe me, I know they're bad. You know, I know this sexual abuse among you ladies is a terrible thing. But believe me, it happened to men too. You know, nearly every fifth step I do with another human being, that comes up in the picture also, with men as well as women. If we've got that kind of resentment and we don't want to get rid of it, for God's sake, put it on paper and try to see what's going on with it. Put down the name. What did they do? Which part of self is affected? What did I do? Nothing. But let's look in the fifth column and see if maybe we're using that resentment for some reason. Maybe we're using it for a selfish purpose. Maybe we're so dishonest with ourselves that we don't want to see the truth behind it. Maybe we are so inconsiderate of another human being we fail to realize that people that do those things to us, they're not necessarily bad people, they're sick people too. They didn't necessarily do it to us, they would have done it to anybody in that position. Because if we got one of those and we know it's going to get us drunk, if we don't get rid of it and we still want to keep it, we must be using it for some reason. This lady that Joe read about here, she used her resentment against her mother. I don't know what it was, don't care what it was. But she used her resentment against her mother to justify her lack of education. And my answer to that is bull. You know, the greatest excuse in the world is if Mama hadn't have done that to me, I would have been able to get an education. And we transfer all blame to Mama. You know, she could have gotten an education if she really wanted to. I don't care what Mama did. She used it to justify her marital failure. Bull. Mama didn't have anything to do with that. She even used her resentment against her mother to justify her alcoholism. Bull. I'll tell you why she became alcoholic. She kept on drinking whiskey. And Mama didn't pour it down her. She poured it down herself. You know, if we've got one of those and we don't want to get rid of it, let's look at it very, very carefully. Because we're probably using it to justify and rationalize doing something we shouldn't be doing, or just as importantly, not doing something we should be doing. And if you get it down on paper and see the real truth behind it, most of the time that resentment will disappear also. If that doesn't get rid of it, then start praying for them. The hardest thing in the world is to pray for another human being that's hurt you badly. But if you don't get rid of the resentment, they're going to hurt you worse yet. They're going to kill you eventually. And if we pray for them, that doesn't mean we approve of what they did. That doesn't mean we're going to walk hand in hand down the primrose path with them the rest of our life. What it means is we're damn tired of letting other people make us sick. And we can get rid of those kind of resentments also, and we become resentment-free at the level that God intended for us to be. Now, Joe whispered in my ear a while ago, and he said, Charlie, the next part of the inventory is fear and then sex. And he said, I've got a hell of a headache and I'm tired. He said, let's don't do sex this afternoon. Is that all right with you guys?
Yeah. Save it for Sunday morning. That's a good time to have sex.
Let's get a good night's rest and we'll do sex tomorrow morning.
I want to point out, did we write down a bunch of dirty, filthy, rotten things? We found the facts. We faced the facts. We're engaging in the process to accept the facts. We've been working at this about an hour and 20 minutes. Not very long. It takes longer to explain it does to do it. See, with our resentments and the knowledge we know that right now, we go back to our hotel room and less than an hour, you can get rid of all your, at least get them all down on paper and look at them if you wanted to. Don't take very long.
So. Tomorrow morning, you guys will be the most beautiful people in the world because you're going to go back and work on these resentments tonight. Tomorrow morning, you're going to be 100% resentment-free. I can hardly wait to see your faces in the morning. Thank you all for being here today. That's all we've got.
What a day. Yes, sir. Yep. Alcoholic. And it's truly by God's grace and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous I found in a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sober today, and for that I'm very, very thankful. And I've been sober since November 3rd, 1973. And for that I am thankful. And I'd like to read the purpose of AA. It's what my sponsor, Franklin, used to call it, the purpose. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and to help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. And I want to thank the committee. I didn't get a chance to do that the other day for all the hard work they've done putting this thing together. I know they've all worked real hard. And I want to thank you guys for being here, because without you, this meeting wouldn't be worth a darn.
Thank you. Thank you. We want to thank Jill and Charlie for taking the time and effort to come up here. The other committee meter members, Bob, would you stand up? Bill T. Lovely Dan. And Pete S. right there that did all the money, the treasure. He was the backbone to everything. And everybody else that come and give us a hand, and the people come early. And it's just all about love.
I want to... Right. I want to thank Charlie here for being my sponsor. The other two I had died, so thank you, Charlie. I want to tell you a little story this morning about the three young boys. They were about 22, 23 years old. They were in the sixth grade. Kind of have to get the picture here. About like Danny and Charlie and I. And the principal wanted them out of the sixth grade desperately. So he called them in the office one day and said, "Boys, I want you to answer these questions I have for you, and if you get the answers correctly, you can go into the seventh grade." So they asked Denny, said, "What is it that women have two of that men like to get their hands on?" And he thought for a long, long time. Finally, he said, "Well, women have two hands, men like to hold women's hands." He said, "That's good, Denny, you can go into the seventh grade." They looked at Charlie and said, "Now, Charlie, what is it that men have one of that women like to get their hands on?" And he thought for a long time, and finally he said, "Well, women like to get their hands on a man's billfold." "If that's good, Charlie, you can move on to the seventh grade." He looked over at me and he said, "Now, Joe, I'm going to ask you a simple question." I said, "God, I hope so. I missed those first two." The main problem of the alcoholics is in the mind, isn't it?
Are you through?
I'm through.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Charlie Farman. I'm a very grateful recovering alcoholic. Because I'm a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, by the grace of the power that I found through the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, haven't found it necessary to take a drink for 13,325 days today, one day at a time. God, you all look good this morning. You really, really look good. Not a resentment left in the whole bunch this morning. Isn't that great?
But I saw one over there.
I mean, how many of you went back to where you were staying last night and worked on at least one resentment? Could I see your hands? Oh, yeah, a bunch of you did. How many of you got rid of at least one resentment? Okay. How many of you did we give a new resentment to yesterday afternoon?
Pray for us. We need the prayers and you need the practice.
I always like to start off with a little joke also on Sunday morning. I told you one Friday night about the alcoholic brain and the brain surgeon. A little story this morning involves an alcoholic, an Al-Anon, and an Alateen. They had been to an AA convention somewhere, and on a way back home, they decided to take a different direction, drive out through the country, see a little scenery on the way home. And sure enough, they got out in the countryside, and after a while, they got lost. And they tried desperately to find their way back out of there, and they just couldn't find their way out. Finally, they came to an old farmhouse. And they went up on the front porch and knocked on the door, and the farmer came to the door, and they told him what the situation was and needed directions. And he said, well, said, it's simple to get out of here. Said, it's not going to be that hard, but he said, I'll tell you what, it's getting so close to dark that you're probably going to get lost again. Said, why don't you guys just stay here at the farmhouse with us tonight? You can get up and go home in the morning. And they said, well, yeah, fine, that would be great. And the farmer said, I only got one problem with it, though. I can only sleep two of you in the house. One of you will need to sleep down in the barn with the animals. And little Alateen said, oh, let me sleep down in the barn with the animals. I love animals, and they love me, and everything will be okay. They all went to bed with the Alateen down in the barn, and about an hour, knock on the front door. Farmer goes to the door, and there stands the Alateen. Said, man, I can't sleep down there. Said, the pigs are grunting, the cows are mooing, the horses are stomping their feet, and the chickens are clucking, and I just can't sleep. The alcoholic said, well, come on in, go to bed. I'll go down there, and I'll sleep with the animals. Said, I was raised on a farm. I like animals. I understand them. They understand me. Everything will be great. So they all go to bed with the alcoholic down in the barn. Sure enough, about an hour. Knock on the door, and the farmer goes to the door, and there stands the alcoholic. And he said, man, I can't sleep down there either. Said, those pigs grunting, and those cows are mooing, and the horses are stomping their feet, and the chickens are clucking, and I just can't sleep. The Al-Anon said, well, all right, come on in. Said, I knew it would be up to me to handle this situation anyhow. She said, you guys go to bed, and I'll go down in the barn, and I'll sleep with the animals. So they all went to bed with the Al-Anon down in the barn sleeping with the animals, and sure enough, about an hour, there's a knock on the door. Farmer goes to the door, and there stands the pigs and the cows and the chickens.
Can't you just see her? You pigs get over there, and you horses get over there. You guys be quiet.
We love Al-Anon. I think Al-Anon's one of the finest things that ever happened to AA. I'll guarantee if it wasn't for Al-Anon, Barbara and I wouldn't be married today. She couldn't live with me drunk, and I couldn't live with her sober. Because of her program and mine, well, we've been able to function together and live together for 40 years, and that's a long time. Okay, we spent quite a little time yesterday afternoon in dealing with resentments. And we took a good, honest look at them as we made our searching and moral inventory resentment-wise. And we found out in the majority of our resentments that we ourselves usually set those things in motion. In column one, if you'll remember, we made a list of the resentments. And we were amazed to find we had that many resentments.
And if we had that many resentments, then they directed our thinking and God couldn't. Column 2 on our inventory sheet, we put down the cause of the resentment. And we found out that it really wasn't them we resent so much as what they've done, which has got us all upset in that second column. Third column, we put down the part of self that was affected. And we found out we couldn't really be resentful toward another human being unless they had done something to threaten one of our basic instincts of life. And as we fill out that third column, we're probably going to see a part of self is going to really predominate. One guy might be marking self-esteem, 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 self-esteem. Another guy, it might be security, security, security. Another one, it might be sex, 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 sex. It's going to be a combination of all three. But for most of us, one part of self is really going to stand out. And we can see the part of self we're having the most trouble with. In the third column, we found out for the first time where anger comes from. You know, most of us have had a problem with anger. We never could do anything about it before. But we begin to realize that it comes from a threat to one of the basic instincts of life. And if our instincts are under control, if our relationship with God is right, then it's pretty hard to make one of us angry. But if they're not under control, our relationship with God's not right, then we usually get angry pretty fast, pretty rapidly. So we learn several things just by filling out those first three columns. We then saw in the big book where the resentments were actually a waste of our time. You know, I've spent thousands and thousands of hours in resentments. And as I look back at them today, I can't see where they ever did me any good whatsoever. They never did make me any money, that's for sure. They never did make me feel better. They only made me feel worse. Never straightened up a relationship with another human being, just made them worse and worse and worse. And I think the resentments are a complete, absolute waste of time. And most of us, we have only got so much time to live here anyhow. And what little time I've got left, I certainly don't want to waste any more of it in resentments toward other human beings. I love to feel good. I love the serenity. I love the peace of mind. And I'm just not going to fool with resentments anymore because I don't have to anymore. I see they're a complete, absolute waste of time. The book also said, though, that wasn't the worst thing. The worst thing about a resentment is it blocks us off from God. Blocked off from God, we don't feel good. And we'll feel bad just so long, and the mind starts seeking relief. The next thing you know, we're thinking about taking a drink. Next thing you know, we become insane and we end up drunk all over again. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. I think I've seen more people get drunk in AA over resentments than I have anything else, period. We also, in looking at the book, we begin to see that the world and its people have really dominated us through our resentments toward them. We always thought that we had it ourselves, that we stood on our own two feet, we didn't need anybody else's advice, but we begin to realize that other people have dominated our thinking as far back as we can remember through our resentments toward them. And if they dominate our thinking, they dominate our decisions, they dominate our action, and we have given them control of our lives. And we saw that for the first time. It began to look pretty dumb, pretty stupid to let people do that to us through our resentments toward them. Those resentments looked so stupid when we saw the truth behind them. About 95% of them automatically began to disappear when we saw the stupidity behind them. For those that were deeply embedded, that didn't automatically begin to disappear when we saw the truth, we found that we could use prayer and get rid of those resentments also. In other words, we could become resentment-free, at least to the level that God intended for us to be. And we found that in order to be resentment-free, as those resentments disappeared, then that part of our mind was replaced with other kinds of thinking. Instead of resentments, we begin to have a little peace of mind, a little serenity, a little happiness, a little patience, a little tolerance, a little compassion, a little goodwill toward our fellow man. And we found that to get that kind of thinking, we didn't have to go anywhere else to get it. If God dwells within each of us, that's always been a part of our makeup. We just never could use it before. But now that resentments are gone, those feelings automatically come to the surface. And a part of our mind is beginning to be straightened out. We're in much less chance of drinking now than we were before we started the inventory process. We went back to the list, and we looked for the first time to see what we did to set that thing in motion, the fourth column. And we found that most of us made a decision based on self, which hurt others, and then they retaliated against us for doing so. And then we played the resentment over and over and over and over, and gradually changed the picture, transferred all blame to them, made ourselves as pure as the driven snow. You know, we couldn't hardly exist when we were out there drinking if we didn't have the ability to do that. And finally, in the fourth column, we really saw the truth behind the resentments, that in most cases, it really wasn't them in the first place. It was us that set the ball rolling. We looked into the fifth column, and we looked to see where we were selfish, where we were dishonest, where we were self-seeking and frightened, where we were inconsiderate. And we began to see the part of our personality, the kind of personality we had developed through our years of living on self-will. And we began to see if we didn't get rid of those things, we're going to keep right on doing the same old things, keep right on hurting people. And they're going to retaliate, and we're going to resent and eventually get drunk over it. And I think we ended up by saying we were doing step four, the resentment part of it. But in the fifth column, we now had the exact nature of the wrong we would talk about to another human being in step five. In the fifth column, we had the character defects we'd be willing to turn loose of in step six. In the fifth column, we had the shortcomings we're going to ask God to take away in step seven. And then quite naturally, many of the names in column one were people and institutions.